Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply. I'm Katie Rich, the deputy editor of VanityFair.com, and I'm here with Vanity Fair's digital director, Mike Hogan.
Hey, Katie.
Vanity Fair senior writer, Joanna Robinson.
Hi, Katie.
And Vanity Fair's film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
So this week we are back from our holidays and award season is back in full swing. The Golden Globes are this Sunday. We'll all be watching to see who wears what and who gets drunk and makes weird faces at the camera. But there's a lot going on in New York as well. The New York Film Critics Circle Awards were last night as we record this. The National Board of Review Awards will be tonight. There's lots of people in town, lots of handshaking going on. So Richard and I will kind of catch up on what happened at the New York Film Critics Circle Awards before we get into our preview of the Golden Globes. But first, the weekend Oscar news, I think, is all about box office because all of the movies are open. We spend months talking about movies and how audiences will react to them, and now they're actually doing it. And even though for a while it looked like this was going to be a really quiet year for movies that people actually saw at the Oscars, a lot of movies are doing really, really well. You've got most of them still in somewhat limited release, but Fences, La La Land, Manchester by the Sea are all really finding their audiences, which I think is a really good sign.
Yeah, I'm personally surprised that Manchester by the Sea is doing as well as it is, just because even though it's a really, really great movie and possibly my favorite movie of this year, you know, the whole advance word is just crushingly sad.
It is a bummer.
It's devastating. And that's just, you know, people don't necessarily sign up for that, especially in the theater. It's kind of like, I might just sit at home and weep if I'm in the mood.
And it is an Amazon Studios release. So you kind of figure eventually it will be on your Amazon Prime for you to cry in the comfort of your own home.
Yeah. But no, it made $4 million last week. It's up to $25 million, basically, $28
million. Yeah. On 1,200 screens, I guess, is the most that it's been on, which is not really even a full release yet.
Yeah. And then Fences doing even better than that. $10 million last week, basically $30 million in all. And La La Land, $9.5 million last week and $34
million. Yeah. And La La Land is on the fewest screens of all of them. It's just at 750. So it hasn't even done its big breakout yet.
So that was our big question, right, about La La Land is like, are people going to actually go watch this movie? Because it has that sort of crowd pleaser feel, it has to actually please crowds in order to, you know, follow through.
This is when I like to feel like I fulfill my duty of reporting back from like the real America.
Oh, good.
The Bay Area being such a good example of the real America.
Yes, of course. I've got my finger on the pulse. But I went to go see La La Land over the holidays with my sister in San Francisco in a sold out crowd on a Thursday night or something like that. And it got a standing ovation.
In the theater, like in like a regular multiplex?
I mean, it's the Sundance Kabuki, so it's like a little whatever. But yeah.
Wow.
We were surrounded by very enthusiastic gay men. So what earth? The gay men of San Francisco really loved this movie.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, maybe, but I felt like a lot of the critical backlash that I was seeing this from people who really, really love musicals and were highly critical of this as an example of the genre. You know, this is the same audience that we go see like Sing Along Sound of Music with and all that sort of stuff, and the cast are in San Francisco, and they were just eating La La Land up with a spoon. So in that screening, standing ovation, I've never seen it in the theater. So
That is really something. I mean, you hear about standing ovation. We think we've talked about this when you have the director and the stars in the room. Of course, you're going to give it a standing ovation.
Right.
Unprompted, that is new. And the thing, I mean, when everyone's at home for the holidays with their families trying to figure out something to see, I think this was a weird year for kind of the Christmas blockbuster. It was basically Rogue One and Passengers and not much else. So I think if you had the ability to see La La Land, like that's the movie you can go take your mom and your sister and everybody else to go see.
Yes.
Well, yeah. We should say that Passengers actually did pretty well.
It did.
You know, this is not, it's not quite an awards contention, but it regained a lot of ground over the holidays. So,
well, my cousin really wanted to see Sing and I didn't make it. So that was my family's movie of choice.
Yeah. Oh, I finally saw Rogue One.
Oh, yeah.
Dispatches from the Real America. Except it was downtown Manhattan. I loved it. We can talk about that on another episode or not. But, you know, another thing looking at the box office that I noticed that I think is interesting is some other movies that have huge hauls. Arrival is at 92 million. It's almost at 100 million.
Yeah.
It will be at 100 million by the time probably the Oscars get announced. And Passengers. No, I'm just kidding. I don't think Passengers
well,
is going to make it.
Well, if you actually look at the per theater averages, which are a little wonky, but tell you a lot about how popular something is, not just how widely it's playing, Hidden Figures, which is opening wide this weekend or next weekend or sometime soon, it made $34,000 per screen, which is like three times as much as like Rogue One made per screen. Like it's doing really well. So I think when that opens wide, it's going to be huge.
That's another rare crowd pleaser. I think we were joking on Twitter that it was almost the only screener you could show your family this year.
It's like, literally the only screener my family watched.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It worked for everyone.
Same. Anyway.
I think it's going to be big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was listening to you on In the Limelight recommending it as a holiday movie for fans.
Yeah. I think that that movie is a major Oscar contender that we have kind of considered already, but like I think we really need to really consider it.
Yeah,
because I think it's going to get a Best Picture nomination. It's going to be a box office hit.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Octavia Spencer thing kind of propelling it. There's the really, it's a great story that actually means something, you know.
Yeah,
and I was actually catching up what I did over the holidays, catching up on that show Timeless, the time travel show that I'm still watching. And they did a Katherine Johnson episode.
Like, oh, really?
I don't think that they knew that Hidden Figures was coming out when they wrote it. So, I don't know. There's just this kind of moment forming around her.
Let me ask a question about Hidden Figures.
Yeah.
Why is all the awards talk circling around Octavia Spencer? She's very good, but her character is almost the most underplayed.
Because people are familiar with her, I think.
She's already won
an
Oscar.
She's been doing
she's
it before.
She's like in the club already.
Taraji Henson is so good.
And so really is Janelle Monáe.
And Janelle Monáe is amazing. Yeah. They're
Janelle
both
Monáe
kind of
is
actually
great in two
more.
Movies. She's in Moonlight too.
They have more sort of business, I feel
and Kevin
like.
Kevin Costner's great in it.
Kevin Costner.
You know, he's really good in it too.
It would be in the kind of dystopian and probable environment here. Kevin Costner's the guy who gets the nomination.
Well,
but anyway, but he's great in it. He's very good.
When they present Trump with a sheet of potential Oscar nominees that he can pick, he'll be like, Costner.
Costner and I spent a lot of time in Mar-a-Lago.
I love the postman.
I think it's worth noting, according to this article in The Hollywood Reporter, Hidden Figures was going to open wide January 13th, but it will open wide this week, which happens to be when Oscar nominations voting ends.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, so they're onto this.
I don't think
this.
Any of this
it.
Is an accident.
No.
They get it. Okay, one more movie, that has a big box office haul, Hacksaw Ridge.
Oh, yeah.
64 million.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, if you spent Christmas in Real America, which I guess none of us really did, like, I think that's...
I did.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Was everyone seeing Hacksaw
you
Ridge?
In the Bahamas, Mike?
Well, first I was in Mississippi.
I spent Christmas in fake America, which is Boston, Massachusetts, with my liberal parents. And a movie that I showed to them that I hadn't seen yet was The Founder, and they loved it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So if enough kind of older Academy voters saw that movie, I don't think it's going to happen at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's actually pretty good.
Michael Keaton's out on the circuit. There's all these quotes from him bad-mouthing Batman Forever, which that's how you know Michael Keaton's out there for an Oscars when Batman quotes start coming back around.
But if we have a year where there are multiple, you know, over 50 million, a few over 100 million, or one or two over 100 million, and then a whole lot of even the kind of small weird movies are making 10, 15, 20 million, like it suits a record box office year, but that actually becomes an Oscar broadcast people will watch.
Yeah. Those kind of middle range movies that make like $30-40 million are like the ones that we're always saying Hollywood doesn't make anymore. But the more often that they get made and have that kind of box office haul, which is really good for what they cost, you know, that kind of is a self-propelling train. Like even Moonlight, it's only made $12 million, but it's only on 137 screens. It's still really, it's going to be playing through March at this rate, especially if it gets the Oscar nominations we think it will.
Yeah.
I want to go back to Hacksaw Ridge really quickly, which is just to say that this is a different conversation, but I saw Silence last night and I am just fully on board the Andrew Garfield train. Like, I don't know if he's going to get anything. You know, there's a lot of contenders we have in front of him, but between that and Hacksaw Ridge, I'm just really, really impressed with what he's done this year.
Yeah, so. I mean, he's had a really good year playing an accented religious person who's persecuted by the Japanese. I mean,
yes. He nailed it twice. So,
yeah, he's got that down.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to jump in on Best Actor and say that I feel like Casey Affleck is vulnerable, but that kind of leads into what our next topic is going to be, which is the New York Film Critics Circle Awards, where Richard and I both were. I don't think we both sound hoarse because we were screaming at the New York Film Critics Circle Awards.
Yeah, yeah.
But Casey Affleck kind of had, I think, maybe the most interesting moment of the night, where he accepted his award for Manchester by the Sea and read a bunch of reviews by David Edelstein, who was the host of the evening, that had criticized him. He basically came armed with a bunch of quotes that were negative about himself and kind of put David Edelstein on the spot in a weird way.
It was intense.
Yeah.
What was the tone of this? Because reading about it, I can't figure out, is it all just comedy, self-effacing comedy? Is he trolling?
It was kind of both.
It was playful, then it was kind of not, and then it was playful again, and it kind of kept shifting as he went, because it went on for a while.
He had like five quotes.
Edelstein didn't drop it, because Edelstein was introducing each award, and he kind of kept bringing it up.
Right.
And I think the last thing he said that night was, Ain't Them Body Saints is still a terrible movie or something.
Oh, great.
It was like, it was like the whole...
What did David Lowery ever do to you?
I know. Like, Casey Affleck started this narrative, and then there were a few more awards after his, before the night ended, and it just, but that narrative kept going.
Yeah.
But yeah, despite, Casey Affleck engaged with the particular group that had given them this award, which I thought was nice.
He was like, I read Peter Travers, I read Owen Gleiberman, and they were in the room.
And
you
he quoted Owen Gleiberman, a review from
Shakespeare in Love, a movie that Ben Affleck is in.
Oh, right.
I don't know if that's why he quoted it.
That's true.
But yeah, it was, I mean, Casey Affleck is on the circuit. He's doing the thing. Yeah. He's got a crazy beard, which is its own thing. But I don't know if he's like...
He's doing the silent sequel, so he's
got... There you go. The inevitable silent sequel. But the kind of self-effacing comedy thing, like he was kind of going for it, but it doesn't seem like his natural state of things.
That's what he did on Saturday Night Live, and it was super weird because he had that dirtbag beard for every sketch of
it's
Saturday Night Live.
It's for a role, I think.
Which was just like... crazy. And then and then he made fun of it and himself in the opening monologue, like that's what you're supposed to do on Saturday Night Live. And he was actually pretty good. When they could figure out how to work a sketch around his beard, it was actually pretty good, but it was definitely a challenge. But that's part of the circuit, is the SNL, is the talk show. And he was also good on Maron. I listened to all of his Marc Maron appearance. He was really good on it, but I listened to it sort of hoping that they would touch on any of the things that we've talked about, Casey Affleck, on the show. And Maron started with a disclaimer saying, I wasn't going to ask him about it. It's very interesting. Well, Maron said that it's a part of Casey Affleck's settlement that he can't talk about the case. So he's like, I wasn't going to ask him about it. Like, they didn't say I couldn't ask about it, but they told me he couldn't say anything about it. So that's, I guess, how he's trying to sidestep it.
I didn't think about that being one of the reasons that it keeps not coming up. He didn't come up at the New York Film Critics Circle Awards, that's for sure.
Came up a little on Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, hasn't he kind of talked about it and said when somebody makes up a bunch of stuff about you that isn't true, it's really hurtful to you and your family?
Yeah.
Like, he said that.
He did say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm torn on that. It's tough because I love the performance so much. Yeah. I've watched the film twice. I adore the film. Mm-hmm. He is so sort of lovable and broken in the film, and I thought on SNL he kind of had the same persona going.
Yeah.
I mean, I love that sketch in the Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah, the Dunkin' Donuts.
Absolutely genius.
It was a documentary. I mean, that was
right. But there's something very dark about this guy, and even when you read the details of the sexual harassment complaints, even that felt like it could have been, as we've discussed on the show, method acting and trolling gone horribly, horribly, horribly wrong. And I'm not defending it. I'm just saying, like, this, he doesn't, seems to have a weird sense of humor and a dark side, big time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that there was something, I don't know how this works. I think it's organized by the Critics Circle and the PR team, but, you know, Amy Ryan introduced Casey Affleck last night and, you know, they were in Gone Baby Gone together, and they weren't playing romantic interests. They were sort of actually kind of antagonists in a way in that film. But she had nothing but glowing things to say about him. Again, that's not to sort of say that other things didn't happen. It's just that, like, to what you were saying, Mike, maybe he's just kind of this different person depending on the experience. And right now he's kind of in a good mode, and he was in a terrible mode during
it. Almost feels like he's still sort of in this Manchester character. He's kind of like the self-effacing kind of like shuffling, you know, making a joke but might like punch you in the face in hopes that you'll beat the crap out of him mode.
Right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, maybe his whole life is kind of method. I don't know.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works. Yeah. Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, so other things happened in the Eurofilm Critics Circle Awards. I don't know, Richard, what were your big takeaways from the night?
My big takeaway was I was going to the bathroom and I bumped into Andre Holland, and who was running late to introduce Mahershala Ali, and he was like, did I miss it? And I was like, well, Mahershala Ali was on stage, and I was like, well. So that was kind of cool, because like I had like met him before, and he walked up to me as if I was a familiar and was just like, oh, shit. And I was like, oh, he remembers me. He clearly did not.
Did you melt from his gaze? Because I saw him in the coat check line, and I was just like,
I'm a ghost right now.
Did he like blow metaphorical smoke in your face? Or,
I mean, he cooked me a meal, which was, I thought was really nice. Right there.
And then he took you in for a quiet surgery in the back room.
That's exactly right. An old timey surgery. Yeah. So that
was just enough time to have my gallbladder removed, actually, before Mahershala.
That was a highlight. And I think the other, for me, honestly, was Michelle Williams, who is not, you know, she's done theater, but she's not like a public speaker. Like, she doesn't like doing it. I think she and Rooney Mara are kind of similar in that vein. She gave such a lovely speech.
Such a good speech.
About New York and loving New York and wanting to move to New York when she was a kid. And that the Critics Circle of New York giving her this award meant something kind of extra special. You know, she was flattering me and, you know, 30 something other people, sure. But like, I just loved that. I thought that she was really classy, and it made me kind of yearn for a longer Michelle Williams award season, even though I think Viola Davis is going to kind of edge her out for most other things.
She had this great line that I wrote up the event and I forgot to write with it on what she said, but it was something about like, I'm not like my other peers who think it's too cool to be excited about an award. Like, this really does mean a lot to me. Yeah. You know, she's an actor, but it felt really sincere.
Yeah.
That's a lie, by the way. They're trained liars.
I know. Well, you know, the fascinating thing about being in the room at the New York event, you know, they were all in Palm Springs. They're going to be in LA for the Golden Globes. So there's like, they have like their New York bits planned out. And Damien Chazelle, I thought, did a really good job because he grew up in Princeton. And he was like, I grew up in New Jersey, which is basically a way of saying I grew up wanting to live in New York. And I was like, yeah, good line, guy.
Yeah. Damien Chazelle gave a long speech that was sort of rich in film theory and film history.
Yeah, he described in detail the plot of a 1927 musical, which is like playing to the critics.
So that would never fly at the Oscars or wherever. Yeah. But like, you know, someone, I forget who
because
it was.
Because there's no time limit, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And there's no band playing you off.
And they're introduced by people, you know, like Baz Luhrmann introduced Damien Chazelle, Amy Ryan introduced Casey Affleck. So
and those
there are
people
these long,
talk for a while.
Yeah. And I mean, well, the best one was Robert Klein, I think is the comedian's name, who introduced Zootopia. He's like this old kind
of.
He
was kind of like, why not have him do it?
Yeah. Like this old New York comedian who went on like, just
you're
like.
Killing
hits.
Me that you're like, is that his name?
It's I'm just sorry.
He did like 10 minutes
I'm
of
so
material.
Old. I am 100 years old.
I was sitting next to our friend Jordan Hoffman, who, trust me, was like,
that's Robert Klein. Come on, Katie.
But yeah, so people just talk for a long time. But that's what's great about a non-televised event. You know, we were in the room. It sounds like bragging, but it is really nice to see them being kind of relaxed.
Someone did say, I forget who, I like this awards night because, you know, no one's really practiced their Oscar speech yet. And I was like, well, yes. I mean, yes, they have.
They're in
and
the practice.
They are, and
that was
that
was Mark Ruffalo who said
that's
that.
That's Mark Ruffalo. Thank
who was
you,
there
exactly.
last year for Spotlight. He's used to this.
That's right. Yeah, that was Mark Ruffalo who's spoke for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, he introduced Kenneth Lonergan.
Yeah. Who,
did he give you like a URL to donate or anything like that?
Jonathan Demme did. So Jonathan Demme spoke later to introduce Barry Jenkins and spent a long time talking about Mark Ruffalo's efforts against fracking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling
you, it is. No, I mean, I know that that's what Mark Ruffalo did. I'm just like, why did Jonathan Demme talk
Jonathan
about
Demme
that?
Was also wearing a hoodie. Which
Jonathan Demme was kind of a quirky dude.
He was great.
I didn't expect.
What about the Trump jokes? Any Trump jokes? Or did everyone just leave?
There was actually more just allusion to sort of a kind of coming
apocalypse.
It was not really like a...
The dark side of the force.
Someone said something about like...
It's like Rogue One is a documentary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There was definitely a lot of like 2016 was a hard year. These are the films. Where like, you know, movies are doing great even if nothing else is. It was more that kind of... I'm very curious about how it's going to play out at the Golden Globes and a televised thing. Because there's more of a chance to like make a political statement on television when you're in a room full of New York critics. Who are you talking to?
There's a room to make a joke, but I think also people feel this compulsion to sort of excuse the celebration. They're like, I know that this is going on, you know, that was kind of the tone I got at the Film Critics Circle.
Please
Awards.
Don't make us cancel all this like we had to do after 9/11. We promise to behave.
That's kind of the tone, you know, and so I think the Golden Globes is certainly going to set that, you know, for the season. I'd be curious to see how that
some
goes.
Kook is going to... Most people in Hollywood do not want half the country to hate them and stop seeing their movies. But somebody's going to go out there and...
Oh, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Put on the crazy hat.
In the Palm Springs Awards that happened, Ryan Gosling gave his lovely tribute to Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds. Were there some Carrie, Debbie tributes happening?
Baz Luhrmann referenced Debbie Reynolds because he was talking about musicals and introducing La La Land. I think that was it, though.
Yeah, I think that because it's not televised, and it's a small thing, people didn't feel the need to kind of like telegraph out things. It was much more interior, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was much more about the specific thing being highlighted.
I think the most telling moment was when Barry Jenkins received the Best Director statue and he was talking about his peers and he said, and Ken and Damien, who I spent a lot of time with, and it's like, oh yeah, they're just going to these things every day.
He also mentioned Isabel.
Oh yeah. They're just all like showing up at these things together. You imagine that they get to know each other pretty well.
Well, we can start to dream about a Barry Jenkins directed Isabel Huppert film, which like, please.
Yeah, I like that idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I saw him and Andre Holland talking to Mark Ruffalo on the way out and, you know, like, put those three together.
The wheels are turning.
I know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the Golden Globes are coming up. We've talked a little bit about what we're going to see. You know, political statements, maybe. I don't know. What else are we looking for?
Alcoholism.
Yeah.
We'll see who's acting wild in the back row.
Christine Lottie in the bathroom.
To me, the big thing is, as I was working on the predictions post on VF.com, is how much of a juggernaut is La La Land? That's my question.
It that's
seems
a good
like the Globes would be tailor-made for La La Land, and obviously the whole division between comedy. And there's a bunch of places where La La Land doesn't really have any legitimate competition.
Yeah.
But one place that I find interesting is Ryan Gosling for actor. Mm-hmm. And because he seems to me to be the most vulnerable La La Land person.
Yeah.
In terms of actually getting an Oscar nomination?
In terms of getting winning.
Yeah. Oh, right? Yeah.
I think he'll get nominated. Well, maybe not. I don't know. But I mean, but there are people who see La La Land. I quote somebody who said this to me the other day. I don't agree with this, but somebody said to me, I don't understand how you make a musical with two stars that can't sing and can't dance. Right?
I think they're fine.
I think they're fine too, but that narrative is out there and some people see it and kind of feel like, eh. And he underplays it, you know? He underplays the role. The one place where it's really La La Land against Moonlight and Manchester and Hacksaw is in director. So if Damien Chazelle doesn't win that, then the kind of narrative that I think we all have in our mind, that La La Land is tailor-made for award season and will sort of bulldoze, could really break down. And then I could imagine something where you sort of have, like, maybe La La Land wins Best Picture, Barry Jenkins wins Director, Ken Lonergan wins Screenwriter, and they sort of like divvy it all up.
That's a really plausible scenario.
Maybe Natalie wins Best Actress and go down the line where it's just kind of like everything gets one award.
I mean, the huge caveat on Damien Chazelle, I think, is his age.
Right.
He's
11. He's literally 11.
He's literally 11.
He's 30. What is he, 31?
32.
32.
Or about to turn 32, I think.
But he has, you know, Whiplash was a presence at the Oscars before, whereas Barry Jenkins is so fresh on the circuit, right? So,
yes. Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Yeah, he was around for Whiplash. Like, he definitely got to know these people. Sam Mendes was 34 when he won for American Beauty, so it's not unprecedented. But I think if you've got kind of an up-and-comer...
He was 34.
I know, isn't that crazy?
That's amazing.
Yeah, the youngest winner was Norman Taurog, who was 32. This is what Google's telling me. But yeah, I think even if he doesn't win Best Director... I mean, at the Golden Globes in particular, I don't know that we can automatically take that as a sign that La La Land is weaker, but I do think what you're saying is really plausible.
I want to go back to what Mike said about many people are saying that Ryan Gosling can't sing or dance in La La Land, and I just want to say that I believe it's Mike Hogan's whisper campaign to try to get Colin Farrell to win for The Lobster in that category.
This is where I pull my mask off. It's like, well, it's been great talking to you.
Our listeners should listen back to old episodes and try to find where Mike has started these kind of sinister secret campaigns for things.
The person who said this to me was an actual human who is not me.
I mean, I've heard the same thing.
But it wasn't. But it wasn't a person in a Words world. It was just like a regular old person. Moviegoer.
Well, isn't the theory? I think one of you guys said this, that Ryan Reynolds is the contender for who might beat Ryan Gosling because Deadpool is such a hit.
In Gold Derby, Ryan Reynolds is at a 20% and Gosling is at like 80%.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, if anyone could take him down according to those folks,
Jonah Hill in War Dogs.
It's Jonah Hill in War Dogs. I literally had to look up what movie Jonah Hill was in this year
Some weird nominations in there.
Okay, but the last person that we haven't mentioned yet in that category is Hugh Grant, Florence Foster Jenkins, who I loved and thought was amazing. Yeah. And that does feel like a Golden Globes. I mean, Ryan Gosling's going to win, but I loved Hugh Grant.
It does feel like a Golden Globes win.
It could totally
though.
Happen. Yeah. That could 100% happen. Yeah. That and Mel Gibson could win director.
Well, so I was writing, I wrote up Best Picture for the Golden Globes prediction drama. And, you know, I think the conventional thinking is that, oh, this is a race between Moonlight and Manchester by the Sea. But the Golden Globes are so weird that I don't think, you know, the conventional sort of thinking is best applied to these awards. I mean, there is an honest chance Hacksaw Ridge could just win.
Well, weirdly. None of them have ever met an actual American human. So they may not understand that all the stuff in the barracks is like takes place on Mars. The movie really does get good in the second half when they're fighting, but the barracks stuff, I was just like, this is like Caddyshack meets Full Metal Jacket.
It was filmed in Australia and it has that weirdness. It's like, wait, this isn't quite America.
Right. You know?
Even though it's very much supposed to be. You're like, wait, something's off here. Like, yeah.
Speaking of people who are awkwardly speaking for someone like Amy Ryan, maybe sort of doing some PR for Casey Affleck, Rebecca Keegan's write-up of the Palm Springs Awards, she has Andrew Garfield won a Spotlight Award there. And he says, I want to specifically thank Mel Gibson, a truly great storyteller and a beauty of a man. Pause. As far as I know him.
That's a great joke.
Is it a joke, though?
Oh, yeah. I think he had to plan
I feel like this Andrew Garfield is so sincere. His entire persona is just like deep sincerity, that he's like genuinely trying to thread that needle.
I mean, he's trying to thread the needle, but I think he found a very funny, clever way of doing it. Don't you? I mean.
Well, I think that, like, you know, you said, Mike, these are actors. They're. You know, professional liars.
Yeah.
I mean, even at the New York Film Critics Circle, like Michelle Williams, when she was giving her very earnest, nice speech, she said, you know, I called my publicist earlier today. I was nervous. You know, it's like they all do that. They all like say, what should I say? Do you know?
Yeah.
So I think that while a moment like that with Garfield seems so organic and fun and interesting and sort of bold in a way, yeah, I'm sure that there was some thinking that went into that.
It's a bit, but it reflects a genuine problem for Mel Gibson.
Yeah.
I mean, it reflects the genuine concern, you know. But the good news is that he went up there and did that versus somebody like Cate Blanchett, who by the time she won the Oscar for, what's it called?
Blue Jasmine,
like literally just wouldn't mention Woody
It was
Allen's
like he didn't
name.
Even make the movie.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So do we think there's a chance that Andrew Garfield jumps up in the actor category?
I think he is surging in a way that, we should pay attention to that. You know, I think that he does have the problem of the kind of bifurcated, like he's in two movies that are very similar in theme and in certain themes anyway. I don't know. I think that he should not be counted out.
What if he wins Best Actor and Emma Stone wins Best Actress?
Well,
does that bring them back together?
I know.
I have two fanfic things
ready to go. I have one for one inevitability, one for the other.
So. Or it's just for one moment they relive their entire relationship.
Oh, and there's a dream ballet.
And there's a dream ballet.
A dream ballet set at the Oscars.
At the Oscars.
Does sound incredible.
Michael Hanavicius just was like perked up somewhere in LA.
And Damien Chazelle bats him back down. It's like, now it's my turn.
Jean.
So we're going to end by going big before we go home. Since we've been talking about Andrew Garfield and Casey Affleck, we figure we'd take another look at Best Actor, which I think is a more interesting category than we've been giving it credit for. So Joanna, who's going to win Best Actor?
I'll do a should win, will win. Should win, probably Casey Affleck. Will win, probably Casey Affleck. but we shouldn't count out Denzel, obviously.
Yeah, we didn't talk about Denzel in this episode yet, but he's still definitely in there. Richard, what about you?
I would say should win Denzel. I think his is the strongest male lead of the year. Will win. I think there's going to be a late break for Garfield, and I'm going to call it for him. It's not going to happen. But I don't know.
You've kind of convinced me.
If the voters have seen Silence, I think the power of those two performances combined could get him there.
I think the voters also need to figure out who he is. Like, I think he's not, he's a household name to me because I've been in love with him since, I don't know, The Social Network, but.
Well, he's Spider-Man, right?
Like, yeah, but.
A pretty big movie star.
Yeah, but.
Those Spider-Man movies kind of didn't happen.
I don't think anyone.
He's Mr. Emma Stone. I don't know.
I think older Academy voters are like, who? But Affleck, that's a name they know, you know.
Yeah. So
I think that that's probably one of
the Garfield's. The kid with the hair. Right. Andrew Garfield's hair should win an award.
Is he British? Is he American? I don't know.
Yeah. What do you think, Mike?
I'm sticking with Casey Affleck. I think his is the best performance of the year, even though I think Denzel is amazing in Fences. But I don't know. I really don't know how this Casey Affleck sexual harassment stuff's going to play out. I just don't know that he has the... If it does blow up, I think it could really hurt him. I don't know. He doesn't seem to have any movement to do anything about it if somebody decides to make it an issue.
Yeah, and it feels like he's there because he had a great performance, but there's not the strong momentum behind him that usually... Like Viola Davis, where she just keeps winning, and there's just like everyone wants to give her an award.
Yeah. So I think they'd probably rather give it to Andrew Garfield, who is a movie star, who is, you know, a big charitable guy who's got a big career headed up for him.
School bus full of kids
trailing him everywhere he goes.
Yeah, and maybe it's a way to award Hacksaw Ridge without giving Mel Gibson actually anything.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to take all these theories and then just maybe say Denzel Washington wins at the end of all this. That you can't decide between Garfield and Affleck, and they're both kids, kind of, even though Casey Affleck's like 45. And Denzel Washington, everyone loves him, and Fences is making money.
Well, and in a weird way, if you're lumping awards, giving one award to commemorate multiple achievements, like, he's not going to win director.
Yeah.
But it kind of signals, hey, that's really hard to act in a movie that you also direct in and be good and make the movie good. So. Yeah.
It's like when George Clooney won Best Supporting Actor for Syriana and said, well, I guess I'm not winning director, because he was nominated for Good Night and Good Luck that same year.
And they all want to direct.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're trained. I hope you learned a few things today. They're trained liars who want to direct.
And we want all of them to give us interviews and come on this podcast.
Please come on the show.
What the listeners can't see is that Mike is smoking a cigar and like has his feet up on the desk. Yeah.
All except for Colin Farrell in The Love.
Who is perfect.
That's exactly right.
Who, as a fellow Irishman.
All right. That does it for this week's Little Gold Men. Thank you so much for listening. And please rate and review us on iTunes. We really appreciate it. You can find us all at vanityfair.com. We'll be covering the Golden Globes and all the other many awards things in the coming weeks. You can find us on Twitter at Little Gold Men. And on our own, I'm at Katie Rich. Richard.
Rylaws, R-I-L-A-W-S.
Joanna.
So I wrote this.
And Mike.
Mike _ Hogan.
This episode was edited and produced by Alana Milner. And thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. And this week's award for how we all felt as January 1st dawned goes to Mike Hogan.
10 minutes.
I'm so old. I am 100 years old.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.